It's 12 minutes past three. That's Friday afternoon. Now, my guest this afternoon, final guest of the week, is a teacher, business motivator, sports coach, swimmer, counsellor, NLP coach, and currently holds 20 world records, which I'm sure must be a record in itself, nearly. Dr. Julie Bradshaw was awarded an MBE for services to swimming and charity in 2006, and she joins us in the studio. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Swimming's a bit of a thing for you then, isn't it?
It certainly is and has been ever since, well, since I was about 8 years old.
Really?
It's just been an ongoing thing, and obviously I love it. Still at it now, age 50.
Look, you know, I take my 8-year-old son swimming on a Saturday, and we go up to Loughborough University, and he swims there, and that's great, and he enjoys it. But what made you become a passion beyond just wanting to be able to do a bit of swimming?
Well, I'd always enjoyed sports at school. I was born and bred in Blackpool, and I had a teacher at school who, you know, was very inspiring, taught me to swim. As I say, the longer when I went swimming, the longer it went on for, the better I was. And it was just a passion that grew. My particular interest in long distance swimming arrived because my parents and my brother, my family, we used to do a lot of caravanning up in the Lake District, up near Ambleside. And we went in a local swimming pool one day and saw a sign say the Cross Windermere Swim. Decided to enter it, and it all spiralled from there, really.
I mean, even the thought of swimming across Windermere, I mean, it's cold, it's deep, and it's a long way.
Well, if you go up there now, it's actually quite warm because of the weather we're having. But in those days, it was actually very cold. At the moment, the water's probably about 21, 22, surprisingly enough. You were lucky if it was about 14 to be warm. I always enjoyed the colder the water. The colder the better, really, the longer the distance. It's just a great feeling when you get outside. It's a challenge to beat the elements and to be swimming without the constant turns of the swimming pool and all the beautiful scenery of Windermere around you.
I mean, it has to be said that for you, it's about long distance, isn't it? That's what you're passionate about.
Yes. I mean, to be honest, if I didn't have any goals ahead of me, I would still go swimming because I love it so much. I enjoy being in the water. There's a freedom being in the water. And to be quite honest with you, a lot of people say, well, why do you go training every day? For me, it's the one time for me and to actually have some peace and quiet.
And is that, I mean, you must train in swimming pools as well as in lakes.
Yes, that's right. I was training at Loughborough University, right. which is where I go. I've also got my own outdoor endless swimming pool, which is a bit like a runner's treadmill.
Oh, that's one of those ones where you get there's a powerful current, isn't there? So it's a relatively small pool, but you can never get to the end.
No, that's right. You push a button and you swim against the current, so you can turn it up or down, the same as the heating as well. I originally got it about 10 years ago because there was nowhere around Loughborough that was really good for swimming outdoors, and I had, you know, not a lot of time, so it was great that I could actually go out of my back door into the garden into the swimming pool and swim.
Do you use that all year round?
I use it all year round.
Do
I mean
you?
I must admit there is a heater on, so in the winter it is heated slightly.
It's just above freezing, I should think.
No, it's a little bit more at the moment.
But you know, the thing is that swimming is great. I mean, I love swimming, and I'm sure lots of people listening would love it. But that idea of being right out in the middle of something takes a certain type of person, I think, because it's about being free. I wonder, you know, that ability to just be you in the water.
Yes, it's, as I say, it's the time for me, and just to be, you know, at one with nature and just to see the beautiful surroundings. There's always a boat with me, whether it be a rowing boat or on the English Channel, a big fishing boat, you know, for safety and support. But it's about being at one with the elements, and, you know, it's great when it's calm. Likewise, it's always great when it's rough because I love the waves and I love the challenge of it.
So you did Windermere. How old were you at that point again?
I was 14 when I did the length of Windermere.
How far is that?
10.5 miles. It's England's largest lake.
At what point did you graduate to the Channel?
A year later.
At 15?
Well, most kids, you know, doing different things at that age. And I went to my parents and I said, oh, Mum, Dad, I want to swim the Channel. Obviously, they nearly gulped to begin with. And ever since then, they were totally, totally supportive. I mean, my family, my brothers, always been behind me. And then a year later, obviously, I swam the Channel in 10 hours, 9 minutes, in a British junior record.
the first of your records?
Yeah, well, the first was actually my Windermere swim. That was a junior record in 4 hours 38, and then it kind of went on from there. And my training ground with living in Blackpool was Windermere, so I was known as Lady of the Lakes because I used to go up there, swim a lot. I'd done a three-way, become the first woman and world record to do three-way Lake Windermere.
What does that mean?
That means three lengths of it. Each length is 10.5, so I'd done three ways. And then the following year, 1981, I did four ways in 23 hours, 17 minutes.
Continuously swimming?
Continuously swimming. The only time when I say to stop is you tread water to take on board fluids, which are passed down from the boat. And, yeah, just tread water and keep going all that time.
For 23 hours?
23 hours, yes.
How did you cope with that? I mean, what's it feel like?
Obviously, there's times when I go through, you know, rougher patches, bad patches, and it's a case of really putting your mind to it. And for me, I always focus on the end product. I always see, something I've always done, is see myself in a nice warm bath, thinking back to the day before, and thinking, well, this time yesterday, I was swimming in the middle of Windermere, and that always gets me through. There's, you know, I do have a very strong determination, strong focus, and that's what you've got to have when you're swimming out there.
Because this is all about personal challenges that are absolutely, I mean, I was going to say they're pointless, and I don't mean that in a bad way. And I mean that they are there to just do, aren't they? They're challenges that you set yourself. And that takes a certain determination and strength to not halfway through say, well, I've done two, that'll be all right. Because everybody would be amazed and thrilled if that was the case. But to do four,
it does take a certain mindset. Like you say, it's personal challenges. For me, I've always used all my skills, all my swimming, to raise lots of money for charity. I mean, I'm currently, well, for the last 10 years or so, I've been raising money for Rainbow's Children's Hospice in Loughborough. And in fact, my next world record swim is the week after next up at Windermere, which, again, I'm doing it for Rainbow's, but also in memory of a friend of mine that was supposed to be swimming in it and unfortunately tragically died swimming the channel last year, Susan Taylor.
We covered that story here on BBC Radio Leicester, and that, I suppose, that was an absolute tragedy. And what it does do is tell you actually how potentially dangerous doing this kind of thing is.
It is, and, like, you know, we all go through, you know, qualifying swims, we all take a medical, all the precautions, the prerequisites, you know, we all fulfil them. And it's one of those things that, you know, you go in there and it can be life-changing, life-challenging. It's just one of those things. But we all know the risks when we go into it. You know, people climbing Everest could, you know, there's more people climbed Everest and had accidents and actually problems in the channel.
Look, swimming Windermere is a massive thing. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Swimming the channel is a different order of massiveness, isn't it? Because you throw a load of other stuff into it. So you throw in tides, both for and against. You throw in weather, cold, you know, traffic, stuff in the water, heaven only knows what. So you said to your parents, I want to go and swim the channel. Presumably, as you say, they gulped, as they would do. You're 15 years of age. But it happens. How do you go about it? You don't just turn up in the car and get in the water, do you?
No. What you do is you hire a pilot boat. Now, they belong to, when I say belong to, they're pilots with the Channel Swimming Association. Interestingly, I have been secretary of the Channel Swimming Association now for many years. So as swimmers come through, what they do is they register through the CSA, which means that we send it all to the Coast Guards with numbers. We check all the paperwork's done. And there's a boat. The pilots are also fishermen who know the channels well. Like you say, it's the tides, the currents and where to land. So you hire a boat and the boat takes you across. Obviously, there's no guaranteed day when you go across because of the weather. So you've got to keep in touch with your pilot and just listen to them, really, because they have the expertise.
And that in itself is an issue, isn't it? Because, again, if you go to Windermere, you can say, well, on Saturday, I'm going to go, I mean, bar appalling weather, on Saturday, I'm going to go and swim Windermere.
That's right.
And you can prepare for that mentally, physically. Mm. With swimming the channel, you can say, well, on Saturday, I aim to do it, and it might happen a week later.
That's right. I mean, going back to when I was 15, we were supposed to, in those days, there weren't as many people swimming, and there weren't as many pilots. And we had more choice, so if you didn't get off, you could actually go back down again. And in fact, we were supposed to go in July, and it was actually the middle of August when we got off. In fact, we were all packed to come home that day, and I remember my dad coming in the room and saying, "We're going." And it was about 7:30 in the morning, and we'd all packed up to unpack, because the pilot said, "There's a 50-50 chance of the weather. Do you want to take it, Mr. Bradshaw?" And he said, "Yeah," because I was 15 at the time. There's a lot of pressure to go down, and it's a big waiting game, you know, the pressure on your mind. You've just got to keep focused. And we went, and we're very successful.
So what was it? Just talk me through that morning, then, the first morning when the pilot says, "OK, we're going to go today." What do you do at that point?
Well, if it's not just on the morning, as a general rule of thumb, like when I did my butterfly swim in 2002, I knew by 7:30 in the evening that I was going the next day. The next day being, we had to get up about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning to actually meet him to go with the tides. So it's a case of packing the bags and eating, and, you know, my stomach's churning a little bit, so it's difficult always to eat so much. And now it's just, then I have to get my mind into the right mindset, and then just going down. I just remember driving down and putting some nice melodic music on just to zone out, really.
And then there comes a point at which you get out of the car on a cold morning. I mean, you know, at that time of the morning, it's going to be chilly no matter what time of the day it is. You put your feet in the water. What happens to you then?
Well, we join the boat at Dover, and then he takes the boat to the beach where we start. Because the boat's a big one, we have to lay offshore about 100 yards. So on board, my dad helps me grease up, put a bit of grease on, which is lanolin and petroleum jelly.
And that, you just cover yourself in that?
Yeah, just puts a bit of that on all over. It also, as well as keeping warm, it helps stop the chafing as well in the water. Hopefully, the smell of it should keep the jellyfish away.
Is it really grim?
It's okay. It's not too bad, actually. Yeah. But I always like to think the jellyfish keep away because of it. And then it's a case of once you've greased up, goggles on, jump in the water, swim to shore. And the rules state that you've actually got to start out of the water, and the swim finishes when you reach land at the other end. So you've got to clear the water. Even if it's a rocky beach, you have to be on a piece of rock where there's no swimmable land beyond. I mean, fortunately, when I was 15, I was able to land on a sandy beach, because we were finishing in the dark, and the pilot told my dad we were going to finish on a rocky beach. And because my dad didn't want to, you know, get myself injured or cut or anything, we went down the coast a little bit. Probably could have landed about half an hour earlier, and then landed on a nice sandy beach.
That half an hour must have seemed like a very long half an hour.
Well, when you've been swimming all that time, it's, you know, like I always say, an hour seems like about 5 minutes. It's, half an hour is a long time, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not, when you've been swimming for about 8, 9 or 10 hours.
Your dad must have had his heart in his mouth, didn't he?
he's always been very good. I mean, he's been on all the swims with me. My dad was always the one on the boats. My mum doesn't particularly like water, so she was always the one on the land organising the food and all the preparations and doing all that and keeping in touch. And, you know, when I was swimming up in Windermere and doing one day, we did 3 lakes in one day, which was Windermere, Ullswater and Coniston. We had to drive from one lake to the other. And obviously my mum follows around and takes the food and everything. So she was brilliant.
Let's have your first choice of music this afternoon. This is ABBA and I Have a Dream. Why this one?
Have a Dream. I think it's an absolutely brilliant song. And in fact, Westlife made another version of it. I always say to people, you know, dream big. There's your dream. Go out and get it. So I like the words in it.
Of a fairy tale.
That's ABBA and I Have a Dream. It's BBC Radio Leicester. Ben Jackson with you on a Friday afternoon. It's 3:30.
BBC Radio Leicester.
Well, the news headlines for you. A three-day humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza has collapsed just hours after it began, with reports of attacks on both sides. Palestinians say at least 35 people have been killed. The Israeli military say one of its soldiers may have been captured. Meanwhile, hundreds of people are expected to attend a vigil at Leicester's clock tower tonight, calling for action to end the current conflict. The peaceful protest starts at 6 and is being organised by the pressure group Friends of Al-Aqsa. Up to 118 police staff jobs are under threat as the initial stages of reorganisation at Leicestershire Police takes effect. The Unison Union was given warning of possible redundancies this morning, although there will be a chance for some staff to transfer to other roles as more work is taken on by non-warranted police staff. The weather cloudy this afternoon with a few bright spells, the risk of a few showery outbreaks, and they could be heavy at times, feeling cooler with highs of 20 Celsius, that's 68 degrees Fahrenheit.
Travel news for Leicestershire.
BBC Radio Leicester.
Well, there's the usual Friday congestion on the M1 motorway as you head up northbound through junctions 23A and 24 in the Kegworth area. At the other end of Leicestershire, slow through those long-term roadworks on the M1 at junction 19, the Catthorpe interchange, especially towards there as well on the A14. In Leicester, busy at the moment, approaching the Belgrave Circle from all angles. And looking ahead to next week, Welford Road's going to be closed, citybound only. That's from Aberdale Road to Knighton Lane East from Monday right through to Friday. At Area Traffic Control in Leicester, I'm Karen Chilton.
World War One at home.
Now this is the first carillon I've ever seen. And it was the first in Great Britain, wasn't it?
It was the first big one. This has got 47 bells.
I can hear the noise now. Cowards, traitors.
We're talking about a horse that you actually rode.
Yes, when I was young, so I was actually seated on Songster.
They were not originally called Saxby Street and Gotham Street. They were originally called Saxe Coburg Street and Gotha Street.
World War One at home.
Returns Monday on BBC Radio Leicester.
I've got Dr. Julie Bradshaw, MBE, in the studio this afternoon, who likes swimming a lot, particularly long-distance swimming, of which you have something like 20 world records, junior records, senior records. You've swum Windermere back-to-back four times, so it's 10-odd miles back. So you get there. Most of us would at that point. Well, I say most of us. Most of us wouldn't make it, but if you did, you'd get out and get into a hot bath and eat something. You turn around and swim back again.
That's right, just keep going, making records and raising money.
Well, at the first time we spoke, I think, it was you were standing on the banks of the Hudson in New York.
That's right.
With the plan to swim along the Hudson. Tell me a bit about that.
Yes, that was back in 2011. I was attempting to swim round Manhattan Island to become the first and fastest person to swim round, not just swim round it, but on butterfly stroke. Obviously, I was very successful in about 9 hours, 20, 25 minutes, 29 minutes. It was a completely different swim because the weather was so hot. The water was so hot, and I'm obviously used to cold, but it was an iconic swim because, you know, I've got some pictures, some shots of me swimming butterfly past the Statue of Liberty, and it was a very interesting swim, very delighted to have done it.
We'll talk a bit more about the swim in a second, but why butterfly? Because a lot of your records are about butterfly. It's not as popular a stroke as many others, as crawl, for example. It's a harder stroke. I think it's more physically demanding. Mm-hmm. It's not so good for your shoulders. Why is it just because it's more difficult?
Well, I'd done all my earlier swimming records, front crawl, and I actually was a head swimming coach in Canada back in, well, at the end of the 80s, 90s, beginning of the 90s. And I'd heard of a lady who'd swam the channel on butterfly. So I thought, let's go and have a go at this. So I started going down the pool over in Toronto and just built the fly up, came back to England, swam Windermere. A few years later, did Ullswater and Coniston. Then the ultimate was to go for the English Channel, which I did in 2002. Yes, it is the hardest stroke in the book, But for me, I really, really enjoy it. Yes, it is hard on the shoulders. However, it's one of those things you've got to take along with it, with the training.
Swimming around Manhattan is, I mean, you've already alluded to the fact that it was different because of the weather and the water was much warmer, but it's also, I mean, I've stood on the banks of the Hudson, and it's a big old river, that is. It's a frightening river. It's tidal, it's fast, the currents are pretty vicious. It's surrounded by boats, crisscrossing, the ferries crisscross between Hoboken and Manhattan, whatever. There are helicopters in the sky, hundreds of them buzzing about with tourists in. I mean, it's dangerous apart from anything else, isn't it, to be swimming in that?
Well, it was an organised swim run by an American group over there, which is held every year. So it was all done, properly. I wouldn't just get in. A bit like on the English Channel, you just don't get in the water because it's the busiest shipping lane. So you'd get a boat that goes round with you. And I had a couple of friends that went on the boat. And we go round. The pilot knew where to go on the swim. Like you say, there were stages on the swim where it was calm. There were places where, especially a place called Hell's Gate, where the water was just going, like whirlpools, and I had to really kick hard because I could feel my legs at the back being pulled down.
I mean, that's scary, isn't it? I mean, that must be scary.
It was a little bit, but you've just got to kick, pull extra hard, kick extra hard and just keep going. And then, of course, when you get down the Hudson, you've got this massive long stretch of about 14 miles, which is very, very tidal, and it was really, really quite rough because I've actually got photographs and video where it's like spot me in the water because you couldn't see for the waves. And then the tide, the current was actually, by the time we got to the end, was actually slowing down. If we hadn't timed it as we'd done, we'd have probably had to be pulled out of the water. So it's a case of timing it right as well.
You see, I am in awe. I'm absolutely in awe because I would have thought the feet, you'd be a very, very small speck in a very, very big bit of water with a lot of other people doing stuff on it.
Yeah, that's right, but I never think about it like that.
It's probably a good thing, otherwise you'd never do it.
Well, it's about having confidence, not just in my own ability, but confidence in the crew and confidence in the organisation, the pilot boat that's taking me around.
Strikes me as a lot of trust involved.
Definitely. It's all, people say to me about me swimming. It's not just about me swimming. It's the journey and also the teamwork. Without a team, I couldn't have done, that without my family. I could not have done the swims I've done. I mean, for example, the week after next, my next big challenge is the 14-way Windermere Relay. And that has been a massive big project to organise. Now, I couldn't go in and do that. There's about 20 people who I'm relying on to drive the boats, to act as shore control. There's a guy at Windermere Aquatic who's lending us two big boats to go with my other friend's boat. So it's all a big piece of teamwork, which will hopefully enable that next world record to come off.
In the States, you have international recognition, don't you? Because you're in the Long Distance Swimmers Hall of Fame.
That's right. There's the Swimming Hall of Fame and the International Marathon Swimming Hall of Fame. And it was great because back in 2007, I was nominated and consequently inducted into the Swimming Hall of Fame, for which I went over to receive my award. Each year, certain people are inducted, and I was obviously inducted for all the swims and all the charity raising I'd done.
How much have you raised over the years, do you think?
Good question. The answer I usually give to that is thousands. I don't have a specific figure, but it's been lots. I've been raising, I'm 50 now. I've been raising money since I was 15.
Why do you feel the need to raise money?
Because that's one thing I like to do. I like to use my skills to raise money for charity. When I was 15, I started out, apart from raising school money for the school minibus, I raised money for the Fylde Hospice up in Blackpool, which actually helped start it off. And then it's all grown on from there. And I've done various charities. And I always think it's great that I've got this skill, and I can go and use it to actually raise money for great causes like Rainbows. They do an absolutely amazing job, and it's just such a wonderful place.
How long is the longest time you've spent without being in the water?
Gosh, how long? It was probably about 3 weeks. It was shortly after I'd been inducted in, well, not just directly after, but the same year I was inducted, 2007. Mm-hmm. I actually contracted a disease called fish tank granuloma, which was basically, I have a fish tank, and I'd clean the tank without any gloves on, prick my thumb on the filter, and I'd noticed that a few of my fish had died anyway, and this bacteria had got in my system. Nobody knew what it was, and my hand was going arthritic and everything. The long and short of it was I ended up in Blackpool Victoria Hospital having an operation on Christmas Day, of all things. Mm. And then 3 weeks later, I had to stay out of the water because of this operation, because my arm, you know, had to be. And then I found this like little lump on my arm. And by that stage, it was really very worrying. And in the end, I Googled it, and the nice registrar at my surgery actually had taken the time to look and the symptoms, and we came up with fish tank granuloma. So as a consequence of that, I was out for 3 weeks while I'd had the operation. I did manage to go in the water, though, with a plastic bag on and do some aqua jogging.
I can't believe... I've never heard of it. I mean, I've got a fish... Well, a small fish tank for the children. I didn't know you could catch such a thing.
It's basically... It's marine bacteria, which is present... It's actually present in outdoor waters as well. It's the equivalent of, like, fish TB. It's fish TB. It can't be passed on from human to human. But what had happened is the bacteria had entered my... Obviously, my system tracked up my lymphatic system, and in extreme cases, it has been known to go through to the bones, and people have had to have their hands amputated. But it's a very rare disease, and in fact, I don't know, when I was under the supervision of the consultant in Nottingham, I had all the doctors come round because it was like being a monkey at a zoo, because they'd never seen this before, and I just kept showing them my thumb, and fortunately, 6 months later, it had gone. So, it was that year that I actually put everything together, because I believe that things always happen for a reason. And because I wasn't able to do a channel swim that summer, obviously I still stayed swimming indoors because I've been told not to swim outdoors. I used the opportunity to actually put everything together and start my own business, which is going really well at the moment.
Business as a...
Business, well, I'm a sports coach, swimming coach, life coach, counsellor, world record swimmer and speaker. I do a lot of motivational speaking as well. But I was doing separate things.
You have such a lazy life. I can't believe it. You get out and don't do something.
Well, it'd be nice. I'm sitting down for a change, Ben.
Yeah. We've got you corralled in the studio. Julie, let's have your second piece of music. This is Brian Adams and the Summer of 69, as opposed to the Summer of 64, which is what
that's
you actually asked
right.
for.
I was having a bit of a manic week last night. 69's a great year because my brother was born. It's also round about the time when I actually began to learn to swim.
I got my first real six-string, bought it at the Five and Dime. Played it till my fingers bled. Was the summer of 69. Me and some guys from school tried real hard. Jimmy quit, Jody got married. Should've known we'd never get far. Oh, and on the back now, the summer seemed to last forever. And if I had the choice, yeah,
Bryan Adams, Julie Bradshaw's second choice of music. We'll have another one just before 4 o'clock. So you've done Windermere, you're about to do that again, you've done the Channel, you've done the Hudson. Anywhere else exotic that you've swum?
Not exotic, but never say never. Obviously, when I've travelled abroad, I've swum in the lakes over there. I think the most exotic has been back about 5 years ago when we swam at Lake Taupo in New Zealand. Beautiful lake, blue, nice. Well, it was about 70 degrees. We became the first team to swim it triple ways, which was about 126 kilometres.
Are there things in there that eat you?
Not yet. That's why I'm still here.
No, look, you do other things other than swimming, although I think swimming is the backbone of really your life, isn't it? But within that, because of course that will inform other things, that inner determination, that self-knowledge, that, you know, the patience, because you've got to get things right, and attention to detail. And as you say, you set up a business that you're a business motivator, you're a counsellor, you do lots of other things. You do NLP too, neuro-linguistic programming. What is that?
It's basically, well, neuro for the nervous system, linguistics, the language part, and programming for the programs that we run inside ourselves. Like you and I have got where we are today by the different programs we've run inside our heads. And it's a very, very effective model that you can actually help change, work with people and help facilitate a change in behaviour. Very, very powerful. I actually use it. I've been using it before I became an NLP trainer. I've been using it in my sport for years.
How does it manifest itself?
I'll give you an example. You know, when I was talking to you about always seeing myself as having achieved it, so I go into the future, it's a process I use in NLP called Timeline when I do goal setting. And I use that a lot with clients, with swimmers, you know. So when they come to me for example, for channel swim coaching, I ask them where they are now, and it gives me an indication of where they are in their process. By the time they've finished working with me, obviously even before they swam the channel, they're actually on the shore, French shore. Mm. Very, very great, very great.
Because then it becomes just a question of, I say just, but you know, it just becomes a question of doing it. Mentally, you're already there.
Yes, mentally I'm already there. Obviously the physical aspect of it.
Slightly.
And the training aspect of it. So I always say to people, you know, when I'm working with them, the goals, they're always very positive when they've finished work, you know, working with me, but it's about, you've got to continue to focus. It's like if you go down the gym and get fit, then all you do is sit down, you lose your fitness. So you've got to continually do something to keep that, you know, that movement going forward.
You use that in not just in sport, though, don't you? Also in business.
Oh, I use it in business because in business, people have a lot of limiting beliefs. Even if it's just, you know, answering the telephone and not being able to speak, you know, I can't speak to somebody on the phone very well. That in itself is a limiting belief, which will have been preceded by a limiting decision that they will have made, not purposely, unconsciously at some time, due to a certain event or whatever's happened. And it's about working with the person to actually move forward with that.
But it's not just a question of saying, you know, using the telephone thing, you say, well, I'm rubbish on the telephone. Just saying to yourself, well, I'm going to be brilliant on the telephone doesn't sort it out, does it?
No, it's, you know, it's down to a lot of different things, you know, a lot of emotions, a lot of, in inverted commas, stuff that's gone on. And it's about sorting that out, because we all have the good resources within us to achieve whatever we want in our lives. Mm. And usually when people come to see me, it's about those good resources being buried. It's a bit like a dustbin. I always use the analogy of a dustbin. At the bottom is your good resources, but if you choose to fill it, it becomes fuller and fuller till those good resources can't be accessible. So it's about emptying that bin to access your good resources and to be able to move forward.
I mean, you do this as a full-time job, as much as you can fit in around, you know, swimming up and down Windermere, for example. And who comes to you?
I have a variety of people, you know, with all different kinds of issues. You know, I use it a lot in life coaching. As I say, I use it in sport. I use it in business. I use it in education as well.
And it strikes me that, of course, in a sense, you're living embodiment of what you're telling people to do or suggesting that people do. And that's quite powerful in itself, isn't it?
It is. I have a lot of clients, a lot of swimmers come to me because they've seen, you know, there's a person here who's actually achieved success and walks the talk, so to speak. And it's, you know, I get a lot of clients that have seen that, especially on my website. And they you know, I'll say, well, off that particular bit of my website, what attracted you? And often they say, you know, the success, because I want the achievement.
I just think it's extraordinary what you do. I think it's amazing. Can you ever see a situation where you no longer do long distance swim?
Probably when I'm in the grave. Who knows? I'll definitely always keep swimming because it's just for me, it's a great time when I can have peace and quiet away from the busy life, and it's a very good stress relief, you know.
You know, when I need a bit of peace and quiet, I tend to either go out into the countryside or maybe go and potter about in the garden, something like that. I wouldn't, if I thought I needed a bit of peace and quiet, swimming across the channel, it's not going to be at the top of the list. Look, before we finish, you are attempting what you hope will be your 21st world record, which is 14 swims of Windermere. Now, this is a relay done to channel swimming rules.
That's correct. It's a relay, there's six of us, and we swim 14 ways of Windermere, which is 147 miles. The team rotates. We do an hour swimming each, and we keep rotating in order until completion of the swim. The plan is to beat the existing record by 21 miles and obviously raise, apart from creating another world record, raise a lot of money for Rainbows.
Do you have to do it in a certain time?
No, it's a case of you just go out and complete it. We'll be the first team to actually have done that swim. There's a team that's done a 12-way currently. My ladies' team actually holds the record for the first six-way and the fastest six-way. But the aim really is just to go out and complete 14 ways. The team is a mixed team. One of the ladies is coming all the way from America. I've got an Australian guy who actually lives in the UK, and the rest of us are British, all of whom have either swam the channel or aspiring to swim the channel, and actually all of whom I've coached in there.
And would you say that this is a good step to the channel then? So effectively you're doing 1 hour on, six off?
Yes, I mean, I started out on Windermere, and I always say to people, if you're going to do a channel swim, if you want and you've got the money, go and do a relay, because it's a good, you know, you can go and have a look, see what the channel's like, and before you actually go and do the big thing. I did the big thing straight off. Some people prefer to go out and do the relay. It is a good, you know, you do an hour and it gives you a good feeling of what actually it's like in the channel.
What is it about you physically, do you think, that enables you to do this? As you say, straight off, you know, you go into Windermere, you swim one end to the other, 10 miles. You decide you're going to do the channel, you turn up, you swim across it. I can't remember what you said, how long it took you to get across the channel.
10 hours, 9 minutes on Funk Crawl and 14 hours, 18 on Butterfly.
But, you know, the point is that people can take years to just get across because if you don't, because it's a really, really tough. What is it about you physically that enables you to do it?
First of all, the right attitude, because without the right attitude, I couldn't go and do all the training. I mean, imagine spending 8 hours in the winter season going up and down a 25-metre swimming pool on Butterfly. Not everybody's cup of tea, but, that's just one of the things that I did in the process of that journey to swim the channel. You know, the training to it, I don't just obviously just decide, well, I can do it. It's all part and parcel. And then, of course, fitting it in with a very busy lifestyle, which is a juggle in itself, really.
Julie, I am genuinely in awe of what you do. I think it's extraordinary because you just seem to just, you know, take challenges like, well, just go and do that then. And it's tough. I'm not suggesting for a minute you find it easy. It's tough, but the fact is you get through it. 11th of August, if people want to help out and give a bit of money to what you're doing, how do they do that?
They do that. I've got a Just Giving page on my own website, on the news section. So if they go to the website, which is www.getsetforsuccess.co.uk, on the news section, click on the Just Giving, and I'd be very appreciative. We're hoping to raise £10,000. We're calling up to about 1,000, so, and with obviously donations coming in, that would be fantastic.
Chilly, your last choice of music, Tina Turner and the Best. Why this one?
Well, after my Butterfly channel swim, I was asked to give a talk at a conference up in Sheffield, well, just past Sheffield, and I was talking to 1,500 people, and this song was played on my way up to the stage.
I call you, I need you, my heart's on fire. You come to me wild and wild. You come to me.
Tina Turner and the Best on BBC Radio Leicester. It's Ben Jackson with you through until six. Remember, if you want to listen to Julie's interview again, you can do online, bbc.co.uk/Radio Leicester. I think I'm being talked into swimming part of the of Lake Windermere. Find out more about that later. News on the way.
Your city, your county.
BBC Radio Leicester.